Some scenes in this documentary have been dramatized. Ingeia Island, Finnmark County, Norway. A few houses dotted around an icy, jagged coastline, and a skimobile covered in snow. A man emerges from a house.
To live in the Arctic Circle shapes you as a person.
The warmly dressed man goes over to the skimobile and dusts off snow.
It makes you tougher in some ways, because you have to fight the cold and the snow and the wind.
He climbs onto the skimobile and rides off, a headlamp illuminating his way across an expanse of bumpy snow ahead.
I thought that this was the safest place on Earth, because it's so far away from civilization. But after what happened here in 2019, that has changed.
Underwater footage of a white beluga whale, an Oxford Scientific Films Bon Pioche and Alfred Film production.
A beluga whale wearing a harness has been discovered off the far north coast of Norway.
How did he get this friendly with people?
Marine experts believe the whale probably escaped from the Russian Navy.
Was he sent on some kind of surveillance mission?
Sparkling water, then rising above the surface.
We were aware that the Soviets had a program, but we had no solid information. I just thought history was repeating itself.
From beneath, the whale silhouetted against gleaming water.
Then I realized, okay, this whale is special.
A small black eye in the side of its head.
This was supposed to be a fun and warm story about a mammal being freed. But it really dawned on me that this is something far bigger than I've been doing before.
Secrets of the Spy Whale. The man on the skimobile slows to a stop and climbs off. He has a short, neat beard and is wearing a fur-lined hat with ear flaps. He walks off.
Ingeia is one of the northernmost islands in the world that is inhabited.
Boats docked in a small marina.
Around 20 people live here.
Fisherman Jor Heston.
I've been fishing all my life. Between that and my family, that is what keeps me going.
A boat setting off to sea.
When you spend a lot of time at sea, you build up your own understanding of how nature works. The days are never the same.
25th of April 2019. A net is being winched in.
Me, my brother and my father were out fishing.
Fish are disentangled from the net.
Spring was starting to break through. The seagulls are preparing to nest. And it's a very nice part of the year. Late in the season, the fishing starts to get very hard. So we were changing location for our nets. Suddenly, we saw a white shadow in the water.
A small red and white fishing boat bobbing on the water, then jerky footage zooming in on a white beluga whale.
Normally, in these waters, we don't see anything white.
Sparkling water.
Sometimes we come across a big piece of plastic. Sometimes halibut can be, we call it sunbathing. This white shadow was big and moving towards us.
The whale, just under the surface near the boat.
it turned out to be a beluga whale.
It swims right up to the boat.
It was really strange. I've been fishing here 20 years plus. This region is not natural habitat for beluga whales. I've never seen one in these waters.
A photo of the whale just beneath the surface.
As it came closer, we saw that it was entangled with something. First, we thought it was a rope or some fishing gear.
It's a strap.
But when it came really close, we realized it looks like there's some arranged harness or something. And we started wondering what's going on here.
The whale swims alongside the boat.
Maybe some scientist had tried to capture a beluga whale for some experiment or something, and then he had broken free.
On board, a fisherman says he's looking for fish. Yeah, it looks like it.
The whale started rubbing against the boat. Yeah. I heard about animals in distress that instinctively knew that they need help from humans. So I was thinking that this is one smart whale.
The whale with the black straps of a harness around it. Then the sun gleaming down onto the boat.
Sometimes when we're out fishing, we get fish that has been caught before. You can actually see how fishing lines or net are growing into the skin. The tissue could grow over the harness to make big sores and cuts in him. If nobody did anything, the whale would die. And I was looking at not a good death.
The whale, its image distorted by the rippling waters.
On our fishing boat, we can't reach down to the water. So I decided to call for help.
4 hours south of Ingeia, Jørgen Rewig, Norwegian Directorate of Fisheries.
I got a call from my boss, and he told me that we have a possible whale situation. In my job, I'm special trained to release whales stuck in fishing equipment. I was worried that if you didn't get it in time, the whale will just disappear. We just had to go there as fast as we could.
Flying over a high, rocky green ridge jutting out of the sea, then the whale poking its head through the surface. Someone says, they're almost here. It's better with the people who know what they're doing.
Fisheries called me. They asked us to keep the whale there.
Come, come. Yes, you will get help. They're coming soon. Yor stretches his hand down to the whale.
You're just trying to connect.
He dangles a fish over its head and says, yes, they are coming. He drops the fish in its mouth.
I remember thinking, just try to be gentle. And not scare him away.
The whale is floating vertically with its head out of the water, Yor's hand reaching towards it.
In ways, I could actually feel that he also were trying to connect.
Yor leans over the side of the boat, his hand just inches from the whale.
We come from two different worlds, but there was a bond.
The whale swims towards Yor's hand, as Yor continues to lean right over the side of the boat. The boat sails on past green coastline, dotted with the odd house.
We had travelled for 4.5 hours. When we arrived in the area, I got a phone call from a local journalist. He heard about the whale and he wanted to join us.
Journalist Alan Klo of NRK Norway is sitting inside a ferry looking out of the window.
How is it that a whale that we rarely see in our shores just pop up alongside a fishing boat with a harness? I was really curious. What is this? There might be a story here.
Jerky footage from Jürgen's lifeboat.
Suddenly we can see this white torpedo in the water just darting towards us.
Someone says it's incredible.
When we see a whale that needs help, we have to film it to see how the equipment is attached and then make a plan on how we can get it off.
The whale breaches the surface and they stroke its head. Then it dives back down again.
When a whale is stuck, they can get panicked, then be really unpredictable.
The whale underwater, with the harness around its upper body.
That's a lot of power in a whale, and it can crush you. We had to reach and take the clips of the harness, but every time we did it, the whale went under.
They reach out to the harness, but the whale ducks under the water, and someone says, how the hell are we getting it off? Be careful.
We tried maybe 8 times.
I'm filming some close-ups. I could sense the frustration about them not being able to get close enough before the white whale swam away. So it was a kind of a stalemate.
It was getting darker.
Now the whale is swimming alongside the fishing boat and Jor shouts, now, he's coming up.
We were running out of time. The most humane thing to do in some situations is to euthanize the whale, to kill it.
Jürgen presses his lips together.
Jürgen told me that they had a rifle on board. And they were trained to put the whale down. I was very determined to actually help this whale. It was clear to me that somebody needed to go into the water. I realized that this is the only opportunity we have and we need to do it right now.
The whale underwater, its domed white head looming.
People had put him in this situation in the first place. So I thought it was really important for us to make it right. So I offered to put on a survival suit and make an attempt from the water. My father wasn't too keen on that idea. So he was, you're not going into the water with this whale. I just said, it is my boat. I will go into the water. On your boat, you're the captain. On this boat, I'm the captain.
On Jürgen's small lifeboat, someone says, now we can get him. Jor climbs into the water in an orange survival suit.
The water, it is freezing. If you don't have a suit on, you will start hypothermia in minutes.
Jor clings to the side of the boat.
The beluga whale came straight towards me.
On board, someone says, now he comes.
It was a very special moment.
Jor reaches over to the whale, but it slips away.
It was scary.
Jor reaches out again.
I was not certain how this would go, but the whale was bigger than I had imagined. And I was like drifting away from all the other boats and I was alone in the water. And this beluga just came all the way close to my body and you could just feel him touching me. If he grabs hold of me and drag me under, he could probably hold the breath longer than me, so I will have a problem.
The whale underwater.
At one point, he came really close to me, really slow. I managed to slide my fingers over the harness until I reached the buckle, and then I just pressed it, and you can just feel it pop. And I just shouted to the fishies that I got one.
The whale swims away, with the second harness still strapped to it.
The second buckle was further down on his stomach. I gave it a couple of tries, but it was out of reach.
We have this hook that is designed to disentangle whales.
Jürgen says, there it is. Yes, now it's stuck to the boat.
And I attach a rope to that and to the boat, and I give it to Jovar.
Take the wheel.
The whale came really close. You could see that he was just looking. Me and I was looking at him. When he was ready to dive, I hooked the hook on the harness. We just burst out in this primal scream.
We can just pull the rope out, and then we can see the harness is on the hook. And that whale is free.
Jürgen smiles. The whale underwater, now free of the harness. It glides smoothly away into the depths of the dark water. As the lifeboat speeds away, Jürgen holds up the harness in triumph.
It is one of the best moments in my life.
Jor punches the air and claps.
Fantastic!
As Jürgen holds up the harness, Jor says, "That was amazing." He shakes his head, smiling.
I said to myself, okay, whale, just go north and you will find your own and never look back and see humans again. And he just made this little slap with his tail and could just see the white shadow disappearing in the deep waters. And I was just thinking, this is the last time I see you.
A stretch of sea, then a bird's eye view of the white whale.
Just wished him good luck on his journey.
From the whale gliding through the water to a road skirting the coast on the barren green island of Rolfsøya, 3 miles from Ingøya. Inside, Rolfsøya tourism manager Lynn Sæther is sipping a hot drink.
When I heard his story, I was very, very surprised.
Walking outside, holding a fish.
The tourist fishing season had only just started. It was quiet there, and we're just preparing for the season to open. That Saturday, I get a phone call from my father-in-law. Lynn, the beluga whale is in the fjord.
Film of the whale just beneath the surface. Someone says, beautiful.
I just started clapping the water. Hello, whale. I called him friend. Hello, friend. And he was looking up. And then I realized, okay, this whale is special.
Come and get a cuddle.
Hiya. Hi. Oh, my God.
This is the closest I ever come to a big whale like that.
Come.
Very curious and not afraid.
Hiya! Oh my God!
I felt like he was looking for something, he needed something, I didn't know what.
Look it!
She pats the whale's head.
And I start playing with him. Try to lift him up like this, I said, go up! And he raced up from the ocean. Oh, yeah. Okay, what more can I do? I tried to make him go around like this.
Go around. Hanging vertically with its head out of the water, the whale turns round.
So then I tried to play with him with a small ring. And the whale just swim under a ring and come up with the ring on his head.
Whale!
So talented.
It make me wonder what have he been doing before he came. I have one theory that he has been a selfie whale living in a big aquarium because he was so eager to smile when I bring out the camera. It just raised many questions.
A selfie of Lynn and the whale. Journalist Alan Clough.
How did he get this friendly with people? Our initial thought was that he was part of an aquarium where people pay money to come to see a whale do tricks. We were quite certain that this was a trained whale.
But we wanted to know who he belonged to.
A hazy, low light over the sea on the horizon.
I've been playing with the whale for some hours. And we heard this noise from above. It was a drone. The drone seems to come from the ocean. I'm pretty sure that he was filming us. It had something to do with the whale, and I realized that he was not a free, normal whale.
Hazy sunlight over the barren landscape bordering the sea.
I was flying over us for about maybe half an hour, actually, yeah, maybe. And then he just flew back out in the ocean.
Dark masses of land with rivulets of sea between them.
Of course, we start to talk. Who was filming? Who misses the whale? Where did the whale come from? It was a little scary and a little, yeah, a little strange.
Alan sets his camera down and sits working on his laptop.
I sat down in the kitchen and started doing the editing job. Now, the footage of the harness was interesting.
Jürgen pulls the harness out of a bag.
Yeah, it smells of sea, the harness.
He and a colleague examine it.
That we had to clip off to get the harness off the whale. And there's some ring. A leash or something. And there's attachment for underwater cameras or something.
He says this is for a GoPro.
No, there was no cameras on it or anything. It was just like this. And it also says in the small letters on the clips.
Equipment St. Petersburg, it says here.
Equipment St. Petersburg. How is this possible? We didn't have any answers. This was supposed to be a fun and warm story about a mammal being freed. But it really dawned on me that this is something far bigger than I've been doing before.
News reports. A beluga whale in a harness spotted along the Finnmark coast is attracting attention. An unusual whale has been lurking around boats off the coast of northern Norway. It wore a harness that was very tight.
This story had been picked up by news agencies around the world.
A beluga whale wearing a harness has been discovered off the far north coast of Norway. It's friendly nature.
We were contacted constantly. It's morning, afternoon, day, midnight. They were, of course, interested in the harness. They started speculating in where it's from and how the whale got there.
Moving along the road that snakes across the island.
I think it was Monday. A sailing boat came from Hammerfest to see the whale.
The whale swimming underwater, then approaching the harbour side, where a young man feeds it a fish and says, "Did you get a fish?" The whale pokes its head out of the water and the man strokes it.
The whale follow the sailing boat to Hammerfest.
Are you going home with us to Hammerfest? Yes, you are. A man films himself on the boat with the whale swimming alongside it and gives a thumbs up. The boat arrives at a bustling harbourside where a small crowd has gathered. People lean over railings with phones and cameras at the ready.
Hammerfest is a city with about 10,000 people, and everybody wanted to see the whale.
People from all over the world have flocked to the harbour in Hammerfest to catch the white whale, which has become the summer's major tourist attraction.
People in Hammerfest was quite proud that the white whale came to them, being a world celebrity.
This should be more highlighted as a tourist destination. We didn't know about this until we came here, just by chance.
And then we saw even more advanced tricks.
The whale surges up out of the water, then catches a yellow float in its mouth and swims over to a boat with it, reaching up out of the water to hand it to someone on board.
There was this young girl who lost her phone in the water. And...
Is this for real? Oh my God, it's for real. The whale is swimming up from the depths with the phone in its mouth. Take it, take it, take it. They take the phone from the whale, then stroke its face.
Quite astonishing. How have he ended up doing this stuff where he obviously is trained? I started doing some research.
Alan taps away on his laptop and does an internet search.
And came across a few stories about the US using dolphins as a part of a marine defense setup.
Buzz Buzz's harness is lined with foam rubber to prevent it chafing her skin. Final adjustments are made to the straps.
My impression was that this was videos from the 60s and during the Cold War era. I was very surprised. It made me wonder, did our whale have a military purpose?
An American flag flying outside a white clapboard house, then droplets of water hanging from autumn red leaves. Animal behaviourist Dr. Bob Bailey.
A friend of mine sent me a photograph of the beluga whale that had a harness attached. I must admit, I said, gee, that's interesting. I know the things that could have been happening.
Old film of California, USA in 1960. A crowded beach and people surfing. Then a dolphin porpoising out of the water.
In 1960, I was hired as a biochemist at the UCLA School of Medicine. I volunteered as an undergraduate to go out and collect animals, photograph animals, collect specimens. Since I was taking care of the animals in the biology department, I started training them. I trained octopus, squid, lizards, snakes. What did I train them to do? Usually go from point A to point B. One time I was walking down a hallway, pushing a little carrier with material for experiments. And I saw a bulletin on the bulletin board for this job as director of training of the U.S. Navy Dolphin Program. I'd never heard of the Navy Dolphin Program. and I had never trained a dolphin before in my life. Over 2,000 people applied for the job, and they gave it to me.
Old film of a nuclear bomb exploding. It wasn't us who brought the nuclear nightmare to the world, but in the name of the revolution, we built our own bomb.
In what we call today the Cold War, the threat of the atomic bomb from the Russians was very much alive. The question was, what sort of defensive capability did the Navy have to protect themselves from the offensive weaponry of the Soviet Union?
1962, Naval Air Station, Point Magoo, California.
Here on the edge of the Pacific, some 50 miles north of Los Angeles, is a major center for the Navy's missile experiments. It is also the location of one of the most fascinating experiments the Navy has ever launched, a program of studying dolphins.
Old color film of dolphins in a large pool.
Shortly after I arrived, a number of researchers came aboard. Some of them were studying communications.
The scientists hoped to better distinguish between the sounds the animals make and to put human sound signals in a form the dolphin is more familiar with. Ee, ee-ah, ee-ah.
Blair Irvin, dolphin trainer.
On my first day at Point Magoo, there were two experiments going on that were related to hearing. The Navy really wanted to know a lot more about dolphins before they were going to try to do anything with them. How well do they hear? How far can they hear? What's their sonar like?
Old film of a rocket launch.
At that time, one of the things people talked about was the space race.
This is the story of the Russian space dog.
Film of the dog being put into a space capsule.
That there was also a space race under the sea. Both the United States and the Soviet Union were developing their submarine fleets to be both offensive and defensive weapons. And of course, they could travel around the world, and they had immense destructive power.
Old film of a rocket blasting out of the sea and a submarine.
Even when compared with the latest of man's sonar equipment, the Dolphin's echo-ranging system seems incredibly sophisticated.
There was almost no research on sonar at the time. But they did know that this is an animal that can locate a small fish in a dark environment, at night or in dirty water. They send out a signal from the head, which bounces off something and comes back.
These echoes convey precise information concerning shape and range of objects, even something of their texture and composition.
Down 500 or 1,000 feet, it's the dolphin's environment. The dolphins had this ability to locate objects in the water, to track things in the water, and the ability to report finding such objects. If they studied the dolphin sonar capability, the Navy might be able to build far better sonar so that it could detect submarines around the United States. The Navy would like to get as good as the dolphin.
Old film of the training pools and white domed buildings of the research facility. Blair Irvin.
When I arrived at Point Magoo, I became aware of this dolphin, Tuffy, who was off in a tank with no trainer. I was supposed to be that traitor. Here is this 24-year-old kid right out of graduate school, and now I'm supposed to work with this dolphin who had 90 very pointy little teeth. And the whole idea was very intimidating. I don't think a book existed about training dolphins, but they gave me a book about training birds and other animals, and that was supposed to teach me how to train dolphins. What I learned was you're supposed to use fish as a reinforcement for the dolphin.
Color film of Blair dipping a fish in and out of the water. Then the dolphin underwater.
If he does a correct behavior, you reward that behavior. The concept of training an animal is you develop a behavior, you develop another behavior, and you chain the two together. And then you develop a chain of behaviors.
A dolphin circling in the pool.
The dolphins were taught to carry things and to accept things attached to their fins, to push things along with their snout, to discriminate between objects, blindfolded.
In total darkness, she must swim through the wickets, then identify the copper target.
And having the dolphin retrieve objects on command.
Old film of a dolphin picking up an object from the bottom of the pool and bringing it up to a waiting female trainer. Then Blair and another young man in wetsuits climbing into the pool.
One of the things the Navy wanted to do is to have the dolphin carry things in the water. It was clear we needed some way of supporting devices. So we taught the dolphin to wear a harness. It might be they swim very fast for a short period of time, but soon they adapt to it.
Tuffy the dolphin in a harness.
When I inherited Tuffy, he would wear a harness.
Old film of Blair floating near a small white U.S. Navy structure in the water. Then murky underwater footage.
The Navy wanted to know what would happen if divers tried to live down under the sea for longer periods of time. Sea Lab, it was called, and it was at about 200 feet. That's where the divers were. They couldn't come up because of all sorts of decompression and physiology problems that are related to divers getting the bends, but a dolphin could go back and forth. And that was sort of intriguing to some people in the Navy that, gee, this is maybe another use of dolphins.
A diver clips a hook to the dolphin's harness.
The harness had a little eye on the bottom of it that could be hooked with a message that Tuffy would carry down to the divers and back. Prior to this, virtually nobody had ever trained a dolphin to work in a non-captive situation. So very much groundbreaking, as is most of our work. The Navy, of course, was interested in this exploration of the ocean because they thought the Russians were.
Underwater film of a diver with Tuffy, then Tuffy swimming off.
The local explosive ordnance disposal divers said that there was a submarine off of Point Magoo that kept track of our missile launches. Several of the trainers, anyway, would speculate about what the Soviets might be doing in terms of dolphin training, but we never were informed as to what was really going on.
The dolphin swimming away, then old color film of Sevastopol on the Crimean Peninsula, and a statue of Lenin pointing out to sea. A grey-haired man in a yellow T-shirt, Andriy Ryshenko, former Ukrainian Navy captain. My father served in Sevastopol from 1961. Sevastopol was very significant for the Soviet Union because it was the main base of the Black Sea Fleet. Black smoke streaming from a ship. My father told me that at Balaklava in Sevastopol there was a research laboratory. It conducted a number of studies related to the sea. A black and white photo of officers leaning over the side of a pool. I found out that dolphins were being trained there. There was very strict and limited access to these people. A stout, white-haired man sits down. Vladimir Belosiuk, former Soviet submarine captain. When I joined the army, I was in the Marine Corps Regiment. At the time, it had a center for training combat swimmers. I was approached by the head of the combat dolphin training center, Kalganov, and he selected several people, including me, because I was a master of sports rowing, and I was a good diver and swimmer. A photo of a young Vladimir. The first thing he asked me was, "Are you afraid of dolphins?" I said, "No, why should I be?" He said, "Will you jump?" I said, "I'll jump." And when I jumped into the water, three dolphins came up to me. I stroked them, and we found contact. Everyone went to dances with girls. And every weekend, I was at the center, spending the whole time with dolphins. More photos of the facility. That's how I became friends with dolphins, and I'll remember it for the rest of my life. I am very happy about it. They are very intelligent animals. Andriy Rizhenko. At this time, the main direction of dolphin training was to detect objects important to the Soviet Navy on the seabed. A torpedo is fired from a ship into the sea. The first task was searching for practical torpedoes and missile engines. A jet takes off and drops a missile into the sea. Near Balaklava, there was a launch position where experimental engines for Soviet cruise and ballistic missiles were tested. There was a need to retrieve them because they were made from costly metals. A photograph of a device. A device was attached to the dolphin, which nudged the object with its nose, and a buoy would surface, marking the position. The torpedo or engine would then be retrieved. Photos of the dolphin wearing the cone-like device over its snout underwater. A dolphin can detect this underwater object thanks to its natural sonar. At a depth of 120 meters, a photo of a dolphin finding a torpedo. Humans do not have that ability. Hammerfest, spring 2019. The shimmering reflection of a building on the surface of the sea. Then a small ferry cruising into the harbour. Jørgen Ree Wig, Norwegian Directorate of Fisheries.
Hammerfest is a commercial harbour. We have boat traffic, and boats are prone to hit whales and hurt them. People were also concerned that the whale didn't find any food and that it had gotten slimmer. So they were really concerned for the welfare of the whale.
Dr. Yves Jourdain, whale researcher, Norwegian Orca Survey.
Beluga whales are not a common sighting in coastal waters of northern Norway, or at least not up to that latitude. To have one in the harbor like this for several days in a row was very unusual. He was totally lost and confused, having all those people around and not getting any food, and trying to perform basically anything he could.
Eve shields her eyes from the light as she watches him.
For 3 days, there was no evidence of feeding whatsoever. I managed to get a GoPro underwater to get his full body shape, and then I shared those footage with beluga whale experts. They all agreed that he was quite slim. He was definitely not fully grown adult. Maybe he was somewhere around 10, 13 years old, but this was only our guess. If he was born in the wild, then most likely he was caught at a young age. That means that he may have never learned how to catch his own fish. Getting the food he needed was crucial to his survival.
The whale, hanging vertically with his head out of the water, then sinking beneath the surface. A snow-covered mountain sloping down into the sea, then beluga whales swimming in the dark depths.
It takes years of investment from a mother to teach a calf how to feed, what to feed on, how to catch it.
A pod of beluga whales.
Belugas are really social animals, typically are found in large groups. But this whale was on his own, relying on people to get his food.
Yeah.
He hangs by a metal jetty.
Because of this, he could not be considered a wild animal. He was caught in between two worlds, making it a very unprecedented situation.
The whale floating near the harbour side. A woman steers a boat.
Here he is, he's coming fast.
Okay. I will slow down, but I go a bit further.
Okay.
There he is.
Come on.
Breakfast time. It was urgent to get this animal fed and back on his feet. But if marine mammals spent many years in captivity, it really is not for granted that you can rehabilitate them and that they will go back to feeding themselves.
It was reassuring to see what they did. And also, I was a bit surprised that there are organizations who does it, which is a good thing, of course. And I got another side of the story that, okay, he's fun to watch, he does tricks and all that, but he needs help.
The beluga whale with his head out of the water. Then a row of children lying on the side of the metal jetty, leaning in as the whale approaches them.
I could see that people were using GoPros in hope to get underwater footage of the whale. And each time he would put his nose on the GoPro in managed care to teach a whale how to perform a behavior, you condition the animal to have his nose on what we call a target, which is just a stick with a little ball. It was very obvious that this particular whale had been conditioned to be putting his nose on anything that looked like a target because he was doing it each time. But we have no idea what kind of facility he was in, so we don't know what he was trained for.
The glossy white whale swimming underwater. Old colour film of the Naval Air Station in Point Magoo, California. A man is fiddling with a reel-to-reel tape recorder, while another man leans over the side of a pool towards a dolphin. Blair Irvin, dolphin trainer.
One day, I was asked to report to the program manager's office. He said that we have another project for you.
A small boat floating on the water.
This is a secret project. You are not to talk to anybody about this.
Dolphins swimming in a pool.
Can you teach a dolphin to identify a potential enemy swimmer? And I questioned him about, well, why would I want to do this? And he said, because those swimmers could potentially be at risk to Navy ships.
South Vietnam, focal point of the West's fight against communism in Southeast Asia.
The Vietnam War was starting to heat up. The Navy was very concerned about the threat posed by Viet Cong swimmers who could potentially float down rivers carrying explosives that would destroy Navy ships. I was given a boat and as many sailors as I thought I needed to act as hostile swimmers.
Underwater footage of a diver.
Swimmers create bubbles. Bubbles cause noise. The dolphin hearing is extremely sensitive, and in this context, it was unfailing. If the dolphin heard a swimmer, he would report, push a paddle. If he didn't hear a swimmer, he would push the other paddle. The Navy was interested in more fully developing the program and going over to Vietnam with the dolphins. The idea was not appealing to me, at least partly because of the fact that I would be really developing a military use of dolphins that could involve taking of human lives, and I did not want to get involved in that. So I left the program.
Old film of a boat setting out to sea. Andriy Ryshenko, former Ukrainian Navy captain, says there is information that many different experiments were conducted with marine mammals. A photo of a man in a white coat bending over a dolphin strapped to a contraption. In the mid-70s, there was an experiment near Sevastopol where a dolphin was dropped by parachute. An old black and white photo of the parachute being dropped. Another photo of the dolphin hanging beneath the parachute. This was done to extend the dolphin's range to detect hostile objects or to get the dolphin to conduct sabotage activities against enemy ships. A large ship on the ocean. Vladimir Belosiuk. Dolphins have indeed been trained to lay mines under ships or underwater objects that are heading towards, let's say, the border of a particular country. The dolphin swims under the ship, places the mine, it's magnetic. It detaches and that's it, the dolphin goes away. The interviewer asks, have you personally seen them put real mines on ships? No, just training mines and that's it. What difference does it make if it's a real one or a training one? A trolley's being wheeled down a corridor. 1967, USA. Dr. Bob Bailey, animal behaviorist.
In 1967, I moved on to a new project. It did involve working with dolphins at sea, and it was for the CIA. It was highly classified. The project was later known as OxyGas.
This is really the first time I'm able to describe in some depth the behavior and technological work we did on that project. The CIA was interested in using dolphins for intelligence gathering. The dolphin could go into a foreign harbor and gather information on such things as number or types of ships. One of the projects I supervised was the dolphins gathering images. Cameras can be attached on the fins, or if the dolphin is wearing a harness, the dolphin can have the image detection device attached to the harness.
Photographic paraphernalia and black and white underwater photos.
It is for detecting ships or docks or any other facilities above the water. I also train dolphins to carry acoustic sensitive devices. It's possible for dolphins to carry devices to remote locations. It could very well be that we take the dolphin there slung underneath a helicopter. And the dolphin is released into the water. It could be that object that you want is 3 or 4 miles away from you.
A dolphin in a harness swimming away.
Previous to that time, the Navy had recorded the sound of the ship that we want. And we had trained the dolphin to listen to that sound and go to that sound. The dolphin places a listening device on the side of that ship so that we can track that particular ship. I have agreed with the CIA that I would not be describing the actual applications which were successful and which maybe were not successful.
Through a variety of sources, 60 Minutes was able to piece together more about this secret project, and when U.S. intelligence wanted to know what kind of atomic fuel was being used by the Russians for their nuclear submarines, it was a dolphin that placed a detection device in a foreign harbor.
This was a very dangerous time for the entire planet. If we can use dolphins to better understand the capabilities of the opposition, then I'm for it.
The word secret on a piece of paper with a strike through it.
Now, news that suggests the new Cold War is getting decidedly murky because somewhere in Russian military intelligence, someone is possibly saying tonight, one of our whales is missing.
Alan Clow.
The military theory had begun to pick up.
Marine experts believe the whale probably escaped from the Russian Navy.
It seemed to be a Russian spy whale.
This region is the northern border of NATO, and the coastline is, of course, very strategic. You have the United States and the rest of the NATO on the western side, but still we're very close to Russia.
A map showing Norway bordering Russia.
So we are sort of squeezed together. The question we all had was, does this whale belong to the Russians? And if so, why did it end up here?
The whale underwater, then green slopes leading to a cove. A grey-haired man takes a seat. Thomas Nielsen, editor of the Barents Observer.
Our newsroom is a 10-minute drive from the border to the Murmansk region in Russia. but we are on the Norwegian side. For me, growing up in northern Norway, the Soviet Union sounded very fascinating, but also scary. We were living very, very close to the Iron Curtain. As a journalist, I've followed the activities of the Russian military in this region for my entire career. A big turning point happened in the mid-1970s when there was an enormous shift in Cold War strategy. The Soviet Union developed ballistic missiles that could actually be launched from their home waters in the Arctic Oceans to reach targets in North America.
A map showing the coastline of Russia by the Barents Sea.
The shortest distance to launch nuclear weapons towards North America would be straight over the North Pole.
Washington, D.C. on the map. Then a submarine.
The Northern Fleet had the most advanced nuclear submarines. They could hide under the ice where it were very difficult for their enemies to track them. And they were always ready to launch within 30 minutes. There were very few places in the world that had more nuclear weapons than this coastline area between Norway and the Soviet Arctic capital of Murmansk.
Murmansk, marked on a map, not far from Hammerfest. Old black and white footage. The Soviet people celebrated USSR Navy Day. A line of cadets and officers on top of a submarine. I went to serve on a nuclear submarine in the Northern Fleet as an officer. We mainly patrolled the boundaries of the Arctic Ocean, the Faroe Islands, Canada, England, and the Bear Island near Norway. A map showing the Norwegian coast and part of Russia. Andriy Rizhenko. There were many submarines. It was necessary to defend them against potential sabotage operations. It was precisely for this that they decided to use marine mammals. Vladimir Belosiuk. I got to serve at the Yokanga base, the most remote base in the Murmansk region. When they set up the center here, they brought the dolphins. They thought they would start training them. They are not adapted to that temperature, to those conditions. Unfortunately, they all died. And then they started to train mammals that are adapted to living in the north. Orcas, walruses, seals, beluga whales are adapted to it. A pair of beluga whales swimming across a large hole in the ice and diving down out of sight. Then a stiff wind whipping snow up into a mist. Andriy Rizhenko. The beluga has very good sonar. It's practically the same as a dolphin's. And thanks to this sonar, it can detect both saboteurs and objects underwater. A whale dives down to a chain. At that time, the propaganda was that America or NATO might attack us. We were in a constant state of tension. 1987. Film of Presidents Gorbachev and Reagan signing the INF Arms Reduction Treaty.
Our peoples, for too long, have been both the masters and the captives of a deadly arms race. This situation is not preordained and not part of some inevitable course of history.
The two leaders shake hands. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, funding for the marine mammal program was significantly reduced.
When the Soviet Union collapsed, the Ukrainian Navy inherited the Soviet Navy's elite dolphin division. All the animals here are now reduced to performing circus tricks. These days, it's the only work that pays.
Everything went commercial and was sold off. A few of them just disappeared. A dolphin swimming underwater. Then film of crowds in Moscow in 2012.
Vladimir Putin!
President Putin addresses the crowd. We have shown that our people are able to distinguish between the desire for change and renewal and political provocations. Glory to Russia!
2012 was an important year. There was a big shift in Putin's way of ruling the country. He immediately signed decrees. Several of those decrees in May 2012 were devoted to the military and to the Arctic. He ordered more surface warships to be built. He ordered increased payments to the security officers and navy officers of the Northern Fleet. It was an important part of Vladimir Putin's strengthening of Russia's economy is to explore natural resources in the Arctic. The Arctic went from being an area of low tension to again being militarized and the arms race taking place up north.
A stretch of grey sea with snowy mountains beyond, then a lifesaver ring with Hammerfest written on it. People photographing the beluga whale swimming in the harbour. Someone reaches out over the side of a boat and the whale swims up towards them. Lynn Satter, Rolf Sawyer tourism manager.
There was a competition about giving the whale a name.
On NRK Radio on the 3rd of May 2019, the presenter asks, yes, what should be his name? We have let people send us suggestions and vote for the best one.
All the suggestions were Yuvar, the fisherman, White Russian, a drink, and you had my favorite, Agent James Beluga.
The winning suggestion with 31% of the votes was
Vladimir.
Vladimir swims off.
Val is the Norwegian term of a whale.
A good twist on a good traditional Russian name, and it's also a nod to a certain Vladimir Putin.
Vladimir Putin.
Thomas Nielsen, editor of the Barents Observer.
We knew the story about the Soviet Union's mammal program in the military. We knew that they had started, restarted the program during the Vladimir Putin period. We started to think that this must be connected to some kind of intelligence work or surveillance or monitoring work within the Russian Northern Fleet. And this became more obvious as no one was actually putting up their hand and say that they missed this beluga whale. So all our traces led to the Russian military in the Arctic.
London. Investigative journalist Sergei Dobrynin.
When I first saw the harness, I recognized it immediately. Equipment, St. Petersburg. It's just well-known outdoor equipment brands. It was started in 1991, right after the Soviet Union collapsed. So we started connecting dots.
He flicks through some papers.
When you do investigative journalism, you just try to pursue all things secretive and interesting.
an incident board covered with photos, papers and sticky notes.
Soviet Union generally used to have a huge number of very strange institutes. They were called post boxes because they didn't have official addresses, only post box number. Our investigative journalists group found one organization nearby St. Petersburg called GOSNIP, the Scientific Research Institute for Applied Problems, which means basically nothing. On their website, they say that they do research in electronics and robotics. But if you want to understand what is this organization doing, you go to state procurement site and you read what do they buy. We found out that this organization is buying fish. We noticed that many papers had to do with marine mammals. Why would they do such research and why don't they mention it on the website? We wanted to see what branches GOSNIP has. We found that the northmost branch was located in a small village not far from Murmansk, in the Arctic Circle, pretty close to Norway. If you look at the satellite images, there's just a few abandoned buildings and half-drawn ships in the harbor. It looked like it was dead from Soviet times. But later we found out that it was not completely dead. Some research was still going on there, and it was research with belugas.
Thomas Nielsen, editor of the Barents Observer.
There are many, many bases on the Kola Peninsula that were put back on combat duty after 2012. The Olenaya Bay, northwest of Murmansk, was our first place of looking. But of course, we zoomed around the coast of the nearby base, also inside the military closed area. So I got some of the satellite images that we were looking at with me here. So what we see here is the Olenaya Bay, and then we discovered this pens with some white spots inside. They are the beluga whales.
A satellite image of two pens containing beluga whales.
Here we can see Russian nuclear-powered submarines. The location of the beluga whales very close to the submarines and the surface vessels might tell us that they were actually part of a guarding system. They could be considered a kind of underwater guard dogs for the military in this area. It is the most secret of all secret submarine bases, the spy submarine program. So of course Russia will do whatever they can to protect this area from NATO espionage. The central question we in the Barents Observer asked ourselves when Vladimir appeared is, did he escape from this top secret military base where he was on guard duty? Or was he brought there on purpose of conducting some kind of surveillance mission?
Vladimir in the harness, swimming alongside a boat.
Comparing with the satellite images, we found that they don't wear the harness when they are in the pens. And that could tell us that he were actually on a mission for Russia and escaped. Which leads us to the question, what was that mission? We have seen Vladimir Putin very fascinated about the deep sea research.
Putin inside a deep sea capsule.
And what is on the seabed in the Arctic is obviously very interesting for Russia to map. Going from northern Norway There is a tremendously comprehensive network of subsea communication cables that are moving the world. Everything from banking to social media are connecting North America and Europe through these cables. The patterns of the voyages conducted by Russia's submarines is very often close to these cables. So one theory we can consider is that Russia is using marine mammals to, in some way, collect information about these cables, because animals are less likely to be detected. Sabotage against subsea infrastructure is a big threat in case of a conflict. One of the big problems is that if they are broken, it's not very easy to put the finger of blame directly to the Russian military. This is a new kind of warfare in between what is sabotage and what is actual war.
A large grey ship cruises past ice floes. Dr. Olga Shpak, Ukrainian marine mammal scientist.
I'm 99% sure that he escaped. I was one of the leading beluga scientists in Russia.
Sea of Okhotsk.
Every summer, I went to the Okhotsk Sea to conduct field work on beluga whales. Our goal there was population assessment. We conducted different kinds of studies and satellite tagging to track the seasonal movements of belugas. Every season when we tagged, we would stay in the same camp with the capture teams.
Men in camouflage uniform on a boat, looking through binoculars at a pod of beluga whales.
The Sea of Okhotsk became the prime site for commercial captures.
A whale is caught in a net.
Belugas were captured there to be later used in Russian ocean area, or they would be sold to different countries.
A whale thrashes as it's dragged out of the sea, up a ramp and onto the back of a pickup truck.
It was roughly 2013 when at capture site we heard that some belugas would be captured for the military research or military project.
The whale is loaded into the back of an aircraft.
I was a little bit surprised. They thought military training had been long, long, long forgotten.
Numerous whales in the belly of the aircraft.
It was difficult to understand why people in the military would like to have belugas and what exactly those would be used.
Valdemir in the harness.
I remember when I heard about this beluga whale Vladimir for the first time. It was an email from my Norwegian colleagues, the specialists on beluga whales. As soon as this information leaked, everyone started to talk to everyone amongst the marine mammal community in Russia. I started to ask around. I understood that this beluga more than likely was one of those belugas sold or given to the facilities near Murmansk, the Research Institute of Applied Problems. I can't fully disclose the contacts where I got this information from, but I've heard what his nickname was. His nickname was Andriuha. This animal was kind of easy to train in terms that it was inquisitive and active, but at the same time, it had the character that it often did what he wanted to do. So it seemed like no one was surprised that it actually just escaped. Of course he escaped. It's just common knowledge now amongst the marine mammal community in Russia. Whether they say it aloud or not.
Dr. Yves Jourdain, whale researcher, Norwegian Orca Survey.
In 2019, we followed Valdemir for 3 months. Mid-July, we headed out for, I think, the third or fourth feeding session of that day, but we never found him in the harbor.
Green hills sloping down to the water on either side of a bay.
We got a report that he was observed on Salen, which is the island across Hammerfest Harbor.
A bird's eye view of Valdemir swimming close to the shore.
We followed him for another few weeks. He was feeding on his own. And he had made this move on his own terms. We considered our mission completed. The situation was obviously caused by humans in the first place, so it's nice that we got to help him through that.
The white beluga whale swimming near a rocky coastline. Then Eve leaning out of a dinghy to touch him.
I got to see Valdemir again 5 years later, in April 2024. It was amazing to see how much bigger he has become. He was way past 4 meters long, I would say. He's obviously able to sustain his body weight. But what could be problematic, he's still on his own and still seeking contact with people. This is not how it should be. Ideally, he would need, you know, other belugas, and he would need his own family members.
A van drives down a quiet street past a clapboard house. Inside, animal behaviorist Dr. Bob Bailey sits down at a table with a sheaf of photographs.
I think ultimately the whole issue of should we be using these kind of animals for military purposes is a vexing question. And the reason it's vexing is because on one hand, these are these great creatures, wonderful creatures, and on the other hand, it's maybe misusing them as a tool for the military. And yet again, because of them having these abilities, they can save human lives. Our soldiers and our sailors. That's, to me, still a vexing issue even after all these years. When I saw the picture of the beluga whale, I just thought history was repeating itself.
A black and white photo of him in the water with a dolphin.
My other thought was, okay, the Russians are obviously training belugas because it's in a northern climate. And my question to myself was, I wonder if our Navy is doing that too. I have no answer.
From underneath, Valdemir silhouetted against the pale blue water.
When he surfaced and met with humans, Valdemir gave us a tiny little insight into the bigger picture of Russia's subsea military activities in the Arctic. The story of Valdemir tells us one very important thing, and that there is a lot of unanswered questions.
A shimmering sea viewed from a boat with rocky coastline beyond. Then a hand on a railing on the boat. Yor is standing looking out to sea.
Helping Valdemir out of his harness felt like ending his military career, setting him free.
A red and white fishing boat cuts through the water. Then you're on board.
It is clearly humans that have trying to take advantage of this animal and use it for a purpose that nature never intended for it. If it was the Russian or the Norwegian or the US, I don't think it matter at all in my mind, because we are all the same, basically. I think we just as a species need to take responsibility for what we did in the first place.
Yor gazes out of the window of the boat's cab.
I had a lot of feeling about his future. It would be easy to say just to let nature run its course. But it's not nature running its course, because we messed it up. This whale is entitled to a better ending than this start. So it's time for him to go back being a whale.
A hazy, pale sunset on the horizon over the sea, and a jagged, flat, rocky coastline. Then Valdemir underwater, gliding past, brilliant white against the gloom of the depths. On the 31st of August 2024, Valdemir's body was discovered off the southwest coast of Norway. A forensic examination concluded he died after a stick became lodged in his mouth. A statement from the Norwegian police said, "There is nothing in the investigations that have been carried out to establish that it is human activity that has directly led to Valdemir's death." Russia has never officially addressed the claim that Valdemir was trained by the military.